Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. From Wondery. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
Doing fine, Justin. How are you feeling?
I'm okay. Real quick, I helped co-produce the latest Goth Librarian podcast. It's on the Spanish flu. Check it out. Also, gotten a lot of feedback on our Unsolved Mysteries episode. First thing I want to address, most importantly, is I was watching an Australian newscast about two men that had robbed a store, and their accents were very thick, and they kept referring to pluggers. And I had no idea what a plugger was. So I reached out to one of our Australian fans and said, "What the hell is a plugger?" And she said, "They're flip-flops, they're thongs." And that's the only reason why I made that comment on the episode, because I thought that's what you guys over there called them. But apparently, a lot of them don't call them pluggers. They call them thongs. So that works.
That's the thing is, here in America, if you talk about Georgia versus Washington versus Minnesota, they'll have different slang terms for things. And we understand that. But when we look at other countries, I think we tend to simplify that too and think, oh, well, that's a term that comes from Australia. All Australians use that, but it's not necessarily the case. And I mean, even in the South, they call soda Coke, and in the North, they call it pop. It's just so funny because we got so many comments coming in about pluggers and thongs. And it was funny because then people would catch thong and realize that to us, thong would sound ridiculous. It's completely different than something you wear on your feet.
Lots of feedback about the case. A lot of people believe it's foul play for the Ray Rivera case. I get their suspicions. I understand. I wasn't trying to shut down anybody's idea or arguments. I was just giving my own opinion, just like everybody else.
Well, the one thing I do wish we had said was we kind of wish they would treat it as foul play so that this would be investigated some more, because even though you and I on most days look at this and think looks like suicide, there are still questions. It just doesn't feel like it was properly investigated. I would be all in favor if they would open that case up and really take a look.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tonight's case, Aaron, happened May 17th of 2001. It takes place in Phoenix, Arizona. It's a disappearance case, but on the face of it, it could be easily written off as a teen runaway. But the deeper you dig, all I got to say is, wow, I'm surprised that law enforcement hasn't moved further on this case. So with that, what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight, we're talking about the disappearance of Alyssa Turney, who, if she's still alive today, would be 36 years old.
Alyssa was 3 years old when her mother, Barbara Farner, got married to a Michael Turney. He had three children of his own from a previous marriage, and Barbara had two children of her own, John and Alyssa. Now, Michael, stepdad, will end up adopting Alyssa, you know, making Alyssa his own daughter. And then Michael and Barbara will have another child together named Sarah. Sarah is about 5 years younger than Alyssa. Now, in 1993, Barbara will die of lung cancer. Alyssa is only 9 years old. Sarah is four. The rest of the children were much older, so they had moved out. This is pretty devastating for the family to have Barbara pass away. I mean, obviously, Alyssa is a stepdaughter, and Sarah is the biological daughter of Michael, and they're treated fairly differently. They're brought up fairly differently. Sarah is obviously given free run of the house and everything, whereas Alyssa has very strict rules she has to adhere to, which causes some conflict and issues in the family. Let's get to what happens on this fateful day. Alyssa is 17 at the time. She's in high school. It was the last day of her junior year at Paradise Valley High School. It was a short day because it's the last day of school. But for some reason, her stepfather, Michael, picks her up from school early so they can go grab lunch together. It is said that they had an argument while they were eating, because Alyssa was asking for more freedoms, more leeway before she goes into her senior year. It's alleged that when they got home, Alyssa had stormed off to her room, and Michael, not wanting to argue and fight with her any longer, left so she could blow off some steam, and he wanted to go run some errands and pick up Sarah from school. So that's kind of the last time Michael will see Alyssa.
Michael picks Sarah up, but he tells her that he's worried about Alyssa because she isn't answering her phone. So he asks Sarah to call her, but she couldn't get a hold of her sister either. Then they got to the house, and they found Alyssa's phone in her room. It was actually vibrating. And there was a note that read, "Dad and Sarah, when you dropped me off at school today, I decided that I really am going to California. Sarah, you said you didn't want me around. Look, you got it. I'm gone. That's why I saved my money. Dad, I took $300 from you, Alyssa." This note was written in Alyssa's handwriting, just in case you wonder, could anyone else have written the note?
It wasn't typed. It wasn't somebody else's handwriting. It was Alyssa.
But people who have looked at this note do say that it looks like that the note is kind of in two parts, that it was written at two different times.
Yeah.
Not only is she saying where she's going, she left her phone behind, and that's just so strange.
Not only that, but her room is kind of in disarray. Her backpack has been dumped out, and for the most part, it's not obvious that she has packed any clothing in a bag or anything like that.
From there, Michael started knocking on neighbors' doors, and then he went to her usual hangout spots. He started calling her friends, but no one had any information. So that's when he decided to go to the police station to report his daughter missing at around 11 p.m. He has to tell the authorities about the note and about how she had said that she was going to go to her aunt's in California. So they take it, Justin, as a simple runaway case.
They don't go to the house to look for evidence. They don't treat this as foul play at all. In their minds, there's no crime scene. It's a missing teen. So that's where this case kind of begins. But a week after Alyssa disappeared, Michael receives a phone call at 5 a.m. in the morning from a California number to his landline. And he claims that it was Alyssa, but it didn't really sound like her. And she curses at him and says to leave her alone and then hangs up. Now, Michael, we need to give you a little bit of background about him. He's kind of a paranoid guy. He has security devices all around the house, security cameras, and a passive recording device on the phone. But this phone conversation that came in at 5 a.m. was not recorded. And Michael claims that he reviewed all the video footage from May 17th, the day she went missing, and he didn't see anything that was suspicious. He asks the phone company and the police for phone records to his home, and it's claimed that, you know, they said no, so he sues the phone company, and they have to hand over the records. Now, this phone call came from Riverside, California, and it was 29 seconds long. Michael presents this to the police as proof that Alyssa has indeed run away to California. But there's no evidence that it was Alyssa calling. It was just he has a log of a call that came in from Riverside, California. That's it. This case goes cold for about, I mean, I don't know how else to say it. There's no leads.
There wasn't a case.
Yeah, there's nothing.
He went to the police to report his daughter missing. And in subsequent discussions with the police, he's basically presenting the case that she had run away to California. And then he even took Alyssa with him to California a few times to pass out flyers and ask people if they had seen Alyssa, things like that. But this is all being presented as she's a runaway. That's it. So it's not as though the police are making calls. It's not like they're coming out to interview anyone or to look at the room or anything. So it's not even that it goes cold. It just was never picked up.
True. And Sarah talks about how distraught her father was during this time. She said that he would stay in bed for days on end. He wouldn't get up, wouldn't do anything. And I would say that that sounds like the natural reaction of a father who has lost his daughter, very depressed and unmotivated. But it's not until 2006 that a man named Thomas Albert Heimer, who is a convicted killer, he has been sitting in prison. He was arrested for killing a woman named Sandra Goodman. He strangled her in a hotel room, and he was convicted of her murder.
And that could make some sense because, as far as anyone could tell, Alyssa had never shown up at her aunt's house. She had never applied for a job. And the money that she had in her bank account, which totaled about $1,800, was never withdrawn. So this does appear as though something terrible had happened to her.
So this guy, Thomas, he's talking about how he's killed 21 women, mostly teenagers. And he's shown all these pictures of missing girls, and he starts picking photos out. And one of them is of Alyssa. And he tells authorities that he found her in like a van, and then got her to come with him on this joyride. He kind of kidnapped her and took her with him. And then they ended up going to a motel together because at this point, Alyssa's his girlfriend, but she was all strung out on heroin and drugs. And that's where he will end up strangling her in a weird, kinky sex act. Well, when the investigators look into this, there's no evidence that Alyssa was addicted to drugs. She was 17 in high school. She might have smoked pot and drank. So the investigators were like, this doesn't really add up. And it's not like Alyssa's been missing for a while and her life has gone down the tubes. This Thomas Heimer guy is saying, I picked her up the day she went missing. So they're thinking this confession is total BS. Now, this does kickstart the investigation. They start looking into what might have happened that day, and there's a lot of family members and friends during this time that have been talking about Michael. Michael has a bit of a background. Investigators find that 3 months before Alyssa's disappearance, Michael had bought a large amount of lye. Now, for those of you that don't know, lye can be used for a lot of everyday home projects, but for the most part, you'll hear about it being used to cover up the smell of decay. Now, Michael will claim that he was doing a project, and at the time that he bought the lye, he also purchased a bunch of concrete.
I had to Google this because I didn't know. You can also use lye to get rid of carcasses. And so it's possible, I guess, that some people could surmise that the lye and the concrete was used somehow to get rid of a body.
A lot of friends and family talk about how Alyssa had told them that Michael was inappropriate with her and that she woke up and found Michael on top of her. Things like that. So investigators start shifting their attention to the stepfather now.
At the time, Alyssa's boyfriend was John, and he told the authorities about a story that Alyssa had told him. It involved Michael, her dad, taking her out of school early and then driving her down into the desert where he tried fooling around with her. And all of these people have come forward to say how her stepfather had been inappropriate with her many, many times. So where do you start, right?
People are asking Michael what happened that day. Authorities start calling him, asking him questions. But his statements about the day of Alyssa's disappearance, they, for the most part, sync up, but there's tiny differences that he'll come up with. For one, he wasn't very forthcoming about picking her up from school early that day. And then when it's obvious he did, he'll claim that Alyssa was planning on breaking up with her boyfriend, and that's why he had to go pick her up early from school. But Alyssa's boyfriend, John, is saying, no, we were doing fine. You know, authorities start going through their text messages, start trying to vet John. They can't find anything that points to John. Detectives would speak to Michael over the phone, but he never agreed to come in and be formally interrogated or ever agreed to take a polygraph. He would not give them any DNA samples. he will talk about the surveillance tapes the day of her disappearance. First thing he says is, I reviewed them. There was nothing there. Then he claims that the cameras were not turned on or they must have malfunctioned. I don't know. I think that you would know. Your daughter goes missing that day and it's the most detrimental time of your life. It's the most depressing time of your life. I would just assume that you would know why your cameras were not working.
There are some issues with the cameras because, one, as paranoid as he is, those cameras probably were never down. And if they were, it was like a moment in time because he would have had them running constantly. I guess as a way of saying, yes, I do have footage, he provided authorities with tapes from the hidden vent camera.
The what camera?
There was a camera hidden in a vent. And in one of the scenes, Alyssa had a fight with her boyfriend. And in another one, she was making out with someone.
So let's just pause on that real quick, Aaron. Stepdad had a hidden camera in a vent in his daughter's room, surveilling her all the time. Got it. I just want to paint that clearly.
He had control over the situation from the beginning because when he went and told the police that his stepdaughter was missing, he was sure to tell them that she probably ran away to California. And then he provided additional so-called evidence that backed up that theory or that claim. And so now they're trying to play catch up years later and they're asking about surveillance tapes and they have to get a warrant, Justin. This is in December of 2008 because they obviously aren't going to get anything from him. So they're just going to have to take it.
Now, at this point, they have moved to a home across the street. They were renting the old house and Michael bought a house literally on the same block. Investigators actually get warrants for both addresses.
They're not going to find anything at the rented house because he moves everything out of that house. They do check though.
Right before the raid, detectives ask Sarah to come into the station. They tell her that they think that her father is involved in her sister's disappearance and that they believe Michael has been molesting Alyssa. Now, Sarah doesn't want to believe any of this, and she has been advocating for her father and been in his corner this entire time. But what do they find once they raid the property, Aaron?
Obviously, what they find backs up this idea that the surveillance cameras were running because they found many recordings. But disturbingly, there were no recordings from the day Alyssa actually disappeared or from the day that Michael got that phone call. To go off the side here a little bit, they had interviewed other family members who had talked to Michael about that phone call, but he had told them all different stories. One of them said he had told them that he heard her saying, "Dad, Dad," and another one said, yeah, he didn't answer that call. So just different stories. But back to this warrant, when they were searching the house, they also recovered a bondage-style sex tape of Michael and Diane Boardman.
And that's an ex-girlfriend?
He was in a relationship with her at one time. But then, and this is just what was said, that they had found a snuff film. This film had in it a woman being kidnapped, bound, and killed. And it was actually edited so that the scene of her being killed played several times back to back. They also found notarized behavioral contracts that Michael had made Alyssa sign. One stated that he had never sexually abused her. This was actually signed a year before she disappeared. There was also a letter written by Alyssa where she claimed that she had been molested by her stepfather. Another contract said that Alyssa was not to engage in sexual activities. Yet another contract was one for the parents of one of her friends, which outlined the conditions by which Alyssa could sleep over at their house.
Now, the next thing the Phoenix PD finds is 19 semi-automatic rifles, a van full of gasoline tanks, silencers or suppressors, 26 homemade pipe bombs, and a 98-page manifesto called Diary of a Madman Martyr. This sounds real domestic terroristy to me, Aaron.
It absolutely does. And they found multiple copies of that so-called manifesto. It was actually written by Michael Turney, and it had a lot to do with his beef with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, who he had previously worked with and had accused of unsafe working conditions and accused them of killing Alyssa Turney. And in the manuscript, he even talks about how he took revenge on these men and killed them. But what else does the manuscript say? Because it definitely references the bombs, Justin.
Oh, it says that he was going to blow up the van with the bombs and gasoline at their building.
The IBEW building.
Yeah, this union building. And then shoot any survivors before killing himself. He has weird stories about these men. He calls them assassins sometimes, and that they're the ones that killed Alyssa, and then he killed them. Now, oddly enough, later in this story, a hiker will be up in a deserted area, I guess, of the California desert, and you'll find remains of these two men, and the coroner will say that they had died of natural causes and that they had died before Alyssa's disappearance. So that's kind of odd that he would bring this up. I don't really know what to make of this, Aaron, besides this guy was planning an attack. He was going to blow this van up. So the investigators, they will arrest Michael that day as he's going out to his mailbox. When they do get him, he has two guns and a knife on him. He will end up pleading guilty to illegal possession of unregistered pipe bombs. I didn't know you could register a pipe bomb, but and he'll be sentenced to 10 years in federal prison. Now, I just got to stop here, Aaron. The guy had numerous weapons, illegal explosive devices, a snuff film, and he is sentenced to 10 years in federal prison. I happen to have a cousin who was selling methamphetamine, and when she was arrested, she was given 5 years hard for each firearm she had on her. She served 15 years, and this guy got 10. Just puts things in perspective.
But at this time, Sarah and her brother John, they both really believed that their father wasn't as bad as the authorities were making him out to be. And so when it came time for that sentencing hearing, they tried to stick up for him because they'd never known him to be violent. The only problem was Michael had hired a forensic psychologist. He testified that Michael was very likely to exhibit future violent behavior, that he was dangerous.
You think?
What I like about this, though, is this expert was giving his opinion. It wasn't bought. It wasn't paid for. Do you know what I mean? He was hired, but he did his job. So the judge, he said, you're putting a lot of innocent people in danger. The only way we can protect society and deter others from doing what you're doing is to impose a harsh sentence. And I guess the 10 years is the harsh sentence.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens.
I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
So now that he's in custody, the detectives have opportunities perhaps to talk to Michael some more about Alyssa's disappearance, but he's not very cooperative.
He will not talk to investigators, but he does make an appearance on ABC's 2020, where he's interviewed. He talks about how he worried for Alyssa a little bit, but he mostly speaks about Alyssa's personality and her character in a very disparaging way. I didn't find him to be sympathetic towards her at all myself, but anyone can interpret his interview differently.
He said that she had a learning disability. Because of that, he had to, I guess, be a little tougher on her, keep tabs on her more than he would his other children. Some would say this is an excuse, and that may be what it is. He just said she was very impulsive, she was naive, and she needed constant supervision so that she didn't put herself in harm's way, which is almost ironic because she disappeared. Now, you and I talked about this interview, which people can watch on ABC's 2020 with John Quinones. You felt like he was kind of softball with his questions. I thought he actually brought more tough questions to the forefront than I expected. But he did seem to go after Michael a little bit, challenging him about what he may have said or done with Alyssa. And I could tell at least that Michael was uncomfortable.
He absolutely was, but I just didn't feel like he had much sympathy. He just didn't come off very caring about his missing daughter. Maybe time has passed and he just is over it. I don't know.
There's a disturbing point, and I don't know if anyone else has taken it this way, but there's a disturbing point where Michael addressed the issue of Alyssa telling her teacher, I believe Diane was her name, that Michael had seen. She had told her teacher that she had had sex with her father. Now, Michael said that's because she thought kissing a boy meant sex. But what if he was kissing Alyssa? What if he's explaining what actually happened?
Yeah, that's a weird thing for like a 9-year-old to tell their teacher, I'm having sex with my father. There are family videotapes galore that are really creepy. There's one where she's swimming in a swimming pool at a Motel 6. I mean, she's a teenager and it's nighttime. She's playing, you know, I think she's swimming with her, you know, her friend or her sister. And she starts asking Michael, her stepdad, to stop filming her. It's making her very uncomfortable. But he just keeps filming her. He doesn't care about her requests. There's another video where Sarah's actually videoing on a camping trip. And they're kind of on this dirt road, this trail. And Michael's telling Sarah to stop recording. But Sarah's trying to get Alyssa's attention. And Michael's saying, she's in a bad mood. Don't disturb her right now. And Alyssa turns around to the camera and says, Dad's a pervert. Now, initially, Michael doesn't even respond to this weird accusation that Dad's a pervert. You know, I would just assume that any father would be like, don't use that word. Don't say that. You don't even know what that means. Something to that effect. But instead, he grabs the camera out of Sarah's hand and starts saying, and Alyssa is a stupid moron.
that's a weird response. And that's a weird thing for Alyssa to say. So, I mean, this is really looking bad. All of his actions and videos are just not coming out very well, Aaron.
Also, in that interview that he did on ABC, he talked about how the government was after him and that his military record does not even reflect that he fought in Vietnam.
Michael had other skeletons in his closet. His brother had shot his wife in the back multiple times. This was in 1974. Michael happened to be a police deputy, and it's reported that he went and tampered with evidence by removing bullets from the crime scene to try to help his brother out. And that's why he ended up resigning from the police force.
You know, when you add up all this stuff, the pipe bombs, the fact that he was making his children sign contracts because he called it a parenting technique, he had a snuff film in his possession. There's a lot more here, trust me. But I'm saying just at this point in time, when you look at all the stuff that's already transpired and the fact that it's very clear that he was trying to steer the police from before they even had wind of what was going on, that this was a simple runaway case, that this is where the target lies. If you're searching for Alyssa, you start with Michael Turney. And so it's not like they gave up, right? I mean, with all of the information that they have, they really want to get him to talk, but he's been so difficult to deal with. And he's even tried to take that manifesto and turn it into something it's not. He tried to say, oh, that's just a work of fiction. Yeah. But I think people know better. In 2015, Michael was sent a letter by the Phoenix chief of police. He wanted Michael to speak to the police because they believed he had information that could help them in Alyssa's case. Now, Michael didn't just send a yes or no answer back. He sent a 6-page reply and said, I'll only agree to be interviewed about this case if it's on CNN live, and that he be allowed to question every member of his family, the judge who presided over his pipe bomb case, 2 detectives from the Phoenix PD, and John Walsh, and, you know, some other requests. And he wanted all of those people to be subjected to polygraph tests.
Obviously, no one would ever agree to all that, so it wasn't going to happen. In other words, he should have just said, no, I'm not going to talk to you.
Is this narcissism, fantasy, or can we not tell the difference sometimes?
I don't think he can tell the difference. But it seems that Sarah, she still has faith in her father. The news stations are asking her to come on and talk. And she's pleading with her dad. She's like, you need to come on and start advocating for your daughter. You know, essentially, like, you need to start doing some damage control for your reputation here because you're not coming off well. And Michael says, yeah, that's not going to happen, and hangs up the phone on Sarah. She's saying, I have interviews set up. Let's get you on, and you can come off a lot more sympathetically when you talk about your daughter. But he just hangs up on her.
Is this what changes her opinion, or at least gets her to look at him in a new light? Because maybe she's so close, she can't see it.
Yeah, I would say that's definitely one of the turning points for her. And Sarah now is talking to family members and going through these family videotapes. She finds out that Michael had sexually assaulted his first wife's sister, who was only 16 years old. And on top of that, Barbara, while she was dying of cancer, he went and assaulted her sister. When Sarah talked to some of Alyssa's friends, they all told her that Alyssa didn't want to move out after high school because she didn't want to leave Sarah alone with Michael. That's kind of a dark thing to hear when you're investigating the disappearance of your sister. She finds out that there's another claim of a videotape from a cousin. This videotape's never been found, but this cousin was an alcoholic, needed some help. He went and stayed at the house.
This cousin says that he popped in a videotape labeled Dr. Doolittle. And what actually showed up on the screen was what he thought was Alyssa and her friend laying on the couch, only wearing shorts, no tops, and newspapers over their faces. And they don't appear to be conscious. And somebody's videoing them. And the cousin didn't stick around long enough to figure out what was going to happen next. But it's alleged that this cousin goes and talks to other family members, a grandmother and an aunt, tells them about it. They are like, yeah, that sounds like Michael. So Sarah's talking to her cousin, her grandmother, and her aunt, and they're all alleging that this video was real and that they all thought that Michael was a creepy dude. I am thinking, if this videotape didn't elicit a call to authorities, what's going on with this family? And I'm sure Sarah has her own opinions about the family drama and how well people did or didn't get along with each other. But wow, if this video really does exist, then that's kind of proof of some sort of sexual abuse going on.
But also how it's possible that perhaps some family members suspected what Michael might have been up to, but didn't do anything. I know that we look back and we can see how there have been some behaviors, some phrases that are used over time that people got comfortable with using, that when we look back now, we say, no, that's wrong. You take it steps further and say, yeah, he's kind of weird. He's kind of creepy. But if you're filming your daughter or stepdaughter topless or without her consent, things like that, that's something that should be stopped. Someone should have done something. But then again, these are all stories that have trickled down over time. But still, I would hope that especially today, we would be more mindful of these things and would step up when we knew something was wrong and do something about it.
Michael will get released from prison a little early in March 2017. Now, at this point, Sarah's thinking, what's going on? Why haven't authorities moved on him? She's talking to authorities and saying, I have these videotapes. I have other family members telling me these really disturbing stories. And the authorities are giving Sarah kind of the runaround, saying, you know, we don't have enough. You know, there's just not enough evidence here to go after him. But then that changes.
Two detectives let her know that they were planning to charge Michael Turney in Alyssa's case. And so you can imagine how she felt about that. What they said was, we're waiting till he's out of prison and then we'll charge him, because they don't want the sentences combined. They want fresh charges, fresh sentence. But just days before Michael Turney was released, the department had a change of mindset, I guess. And those two detectives that had talked to Sarah, they were taken off that case. And so Sarah wanted to know, what now? And they said, well, you have two options. If you want your dad to be prosecuted for the disappearance of your sister, we have to know where her body is, or we have to have a lot of media attention on this. There needs to be more pressure put on this. Well, obviously, Sarah doesn't know where her sister is or where her remains are, but maybe she can get media attention. So that's what she did.
Well, she went to the media and a lot of them didn't want to talk to her. They felt like this story was too old and whatever excuses they had. So Sarah went out, started doing stuff on her own. And apparently she made a TikTok video that got like 80 million views. So she's becoming a viral sensation, I hate to use that term, on her own by advocating for her sister herself. And that's when the networks start asking her for interviews. But Michael will end up getting out of prison a little bit early in March of 2017. And Sarah, who is now 100% gone, done a 180 on how she feels about her father, wants to confront him. And she
tells him that she wants to meet him at in a neutral environment, like a Starbucks. Of course, Michael thinks that, oh, my daughter is here to welcome me back, you know, to freedom and reconnect with me. But he gets kind of a rude awakening when they go to Starbucks, because she immediately starts confronting him about what he's done to Alyssa. And he's saying, like, you know, where are you getting these crazy ideas? And he's just laughing at her and being very condescending to her, not even taking the conversation seriously. But at one point, he says, be there at the deathbed, and I'll give you all the honest answers you want to hear. And then Sarah comes back and says, well, why don't you just tell me now? And he goes, well, you already have your answers. And then the conversation keeps going. And then he says, I'll agree to confess if the state agrees to give me lethal injection within 10 days.
Of his confession.
Yeah. I mean, that's a weird one, Aaron, because it's not exactly a confession, but it is.
It's a very strong indication that he knows a lot more than he's let on. If you think about it, he said, you already have your answers. So he knows by the questions she's been asking him that she knows he's involved. Just like he always has in this case, he wants leverage. He wants something out of this. And in this case, it sounds like now he wants death. He wants the government to put him to death. You know, some of you at home might be thinking, wait, how do we really know this is how what happened? You know, Sarah recorded this entire conversation. So we don't have to worry about who said what. This is actually on record.
Yeah, the whole thing was recorded. She has her own podcast where you can go listen to this whole conversation. Let me just say that there is no solid evidence that Michael has done this. But after listening to this conversation he has with Sarah, what's the saying, Aaron? I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens.
I'm not saying Michael did it, but Michael did it? Question mark.
Yeah.
There was also something about Sarah saying that she had found a map in Michael's stuff, and it was marked coordinates depicting a location in the California desert. Now, she couldn't get them to move on this location, and I find that kind of interesting, because what we know in this case is that Michael, while there's no evidence showing that he definitely did this, there is a lot of evidence that he has recorded things, written down things, taped things. He's made records all along the way. So if he may have marked coordinates where he put Alyssa, that would not surprise me.
I'm surprised they weren't able to find things in that raid they did. Like I said, there was dozens, if not hundreds, of family video that Sarah went through and started posting. I don't know if they were really thorough with what they were looking for.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
Where is this case now, Justin? Because we know there is a lot of suggestive or circumstantial evidence that Michael Turney knows a lot more about what happened to Alyssa Turney. What has been going on as of 2019, 2020?
A lot of raising of awareness
mostly a lot of podcasts and, you know, alternative media has been covering this, like the podcast Missing Alyssa, to try to get more pressure on law enforcement to do something.
Now, in 2019, the Phoenix Police Department did submit Alyssa's case to the prosecutor's office. And this was on NBC Dateline. Sergeant Maggie Cox said that on February 22nd of 2019, the case was formally submitted to county attorney requesting homicide charges against Michael Roy Turney. But we're still waiting for something to happen because as of that date, nothing has moved forward from there. But as you said, Sarah Turney has raised a lot of awareness, has done an amazing job of taking this case from obscure and not investigated to everyone's going to hear about it.
I've been following this case for a while. I've spoken to a lot of other podcasters that have covered it. And something that is really impressive to me, though, is when I listen to Sarah do interviews or talk about the case, she's very level-headed. She is very passionate, but she doesn't let her closeness to the case get away from her anymore. She doesn't think that there's a huge conspiracy theory or cover-up by police. She just knows now how the system works. She just understands that, you know, sometimes you got to do it yourself. And that's what she's been doing for several years now. And it takes a lot of dedication and diligence to do what she's doing and keep a level head and not lose your cool.
As part of the research involved in this case, Sarah was asked some questions. And one of the questions was, in your blog post, and this is at justiceforalyssa.com, in your blog post, Brainwashed by I Believe My Father, Part 2, what do you mean by imaginary time in the military? Now, remember, her father had said that he had served time in the military. He had seen war. He had seen action. And Sarah's answer was, he lied for many years about being in the Vietnam War and seeing combat when that was not the case. He admitted he lied at his bomb trial. So, you know, I said earlier that maybe she's too close. But the other thing to remember here is that people who are predators or who are committing crimes, they aren't like that all the time necessarily. They have other sides to them. And if he's not preying on Sarah, he probably presents differently to Sarah than he does to Alyssa. So I guess my point is, in this case, it makes sense that she was trying to stand up for her father early on, but as soon as she understood what actually had been happening, she has done everything in her power to find justice for her sister Alyssa. And so she does have her website, justiceforalyssa.com, and then she also has the Voices for Justice podcast. And like you said, if you listen to the podcast, you can hear the audio. And it's definitely something that people need to pay attention to, because while we cover cases once in a while where we're kind of saying someone might be involved and they have not been arrested for that crime, well, this is why raising awareness is so important, because there's enough here that we're saying that we believe that the Phoenix Police Department did the right thing by submitting Alyssa's case to the prosecutor's office. And we're damn sure hoping that that prosecutor's office can do something with it. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.